Si vais terminando, por favor, vamos a dar comienzo.
Photographers, please finish your work. We're going to commence the press conference. Good afternoon and welcome this afternoon to this press conference. The press conference corresponds to the film Barney's Version, which is screened within the Pearl section of Zabaltegi and this 58th International Film Festival in San Sebastian. The director of the film has not been able to be with us today, but we do have the two leading actors, that is to say, Paul Giamatti and Rosamund Pike, as well as the two co-producers of the film, Robert Lantos and Ari Lantos. Okay, whenever you deem pertinent, ask the questions. It's time to start.
Sí, una pregunta para el...
Yes, a question for Mr. Giamatti. Yes, I hope you can hear me. Good. This film is a Canadian production and it takes place in Canada. I would like to ask you whether your character, who's a liver, a drinker and adulteress, is too amoral to be a Hollywood production. And that's why it was done in Canada, I think he means...
Hollywood, I don't think, but I don't know. I don't know about that. I mean, certainly it's a distinctly Canadian story, and it's a book and a story that's culturally very Canadian, and it's very emotional thing for Canadians. So I think it could only have been made by Canadians. Whether or not it's too risky to have been made in America, I don't know. I mean, we like amoral people down there too, but. But it's definitely a distinctly Canadian story, so it had to be Canadian.
Siguiente pregunta, por favor.
Next question, please. Hang on a second, please. Yes, microphone.
I want to ask Rosamund how difficult it was to adopt the American accent for the role, and also how difficult it was to play your characters over such a long period of time.
Well, probably the second question both Paul and I could answer. American, it's like learning another language, actually. I went away to Italy with my dialect coach, and we just travelled around and spent about a week together. And I spoke American the whole time, and she'd correct me. So I had the interesting opportunity to be treated as an American in Italy, which, you know, it's very interesting because, you know, you notice the differences. You notice that in restaurants you're being, you know, treated as an American as opposed to a European. And I'm afraid, you know, I think Americans get a worse deal. So that was an unusual insight. But it's I was determined this time to be able to use my own voice, but just in an American accent, because I think in the past I've either failed or ended up sounding like whoever taught me to do it, yeah. You know. And I think it's really important to be free. It's like suddenly becoming fluent, and now I can go in and out. And the aging, I mean, we both sort of, maybe I should hand over to Paul, but I think we both really enjoyed it. I mean...
Yeah, no, it was one of the things that made me want to do the part was the aging. I found playing younger more difficult than playing old, because I don't think I ever felt young, actually, and going backwards was more difficult. I was worried it would be as convincing, but the old, and the character gets more uninhibited as he gets older. There's a kind of freedom that comes over him, actually, as he gets older. In a weird way, he gets more kind of more vigorous and crazy as he gets older. So it was fun, but the makeup was wonderful and all that kind of thing. It was great.
And you're trying to have a... You know, we're obviously trying to... We were talking about it at lunch, actually. You know, in a way, the only thing that limits you is that if you are young playing old, you can't suddenly decide to be a really sprightly 60-year-old, because then it'll just look like you come and didn't do your job very well. Right. Whereas if you were 65 and decided to do that, it would be fantastic. So there are sort of limits of, you know, you have to make a change. So that's usually physical, and it tends to be that, you know, you're kind of
decrepit,
stiffening up a bit, I suppose, with age.
Siguiente pregunta, por favor.
Next question, please. I like the film very much because it's like a rainbow, which has the all the range of colours, and that's my opinion. We saw each other in Venice, and I think you've been to Toronto too, and now in San Sebastian. Are you getting prepared for the Oscars? And the second question for Paul Giamatti. All of that bullshit that goes on in Hollywood, what do you think about this? Apart from being a really nice guy, we believe you're intelligent and funny and interesting at the same time. See you.
Oh, I love it. I just love the bullshit in Hollywood. Well, you know, I mean, there's bullshit everywhere, you know. I mean, there's bullshit in all walks of life, and, you know, you can't avoid it. And, you know, I fortunately get to have a good time and have a fun job, so the bullshit doesn't really...
Didn't you watch DVDs while we were in makeup every day called something like What's All the Bullshit About?
I watched a show every day when they put my makeup on called Bullshit, yes. An American television show called Bullshit. That's all about sort of exposing frauds and fraudulent ideas, so... I don't like bullshit. I like exposing bullshit. How many times have I said bullshit right now? but, you know, it's okay. It's life. Life's full of bullshit. So.
But he doesn't live in Hollywood.
That's true, too. I don't live in Hollywood, but it's like I do in a lot of ways. So it's hard to avoid.
This is a question for Mr. Giamatti over here. The Oscars, to answer the second part, yes, please.
We
hope that the actors in this film should be recognized for the work that they've carried out. But the final result is not in our hands, undoubtedly. For Mr. Giamatti over here, how are you? It seems to me to be a film with a very great casting and the interaction that you have between your character and that of your father, Mr. Dustin Hoffman. I would like to know whether you could tell us a bit about this interaction you had, how you managed to look like father and son so well on the screen, and what was it like to work, obviously, with Mr. Hoffman?
A little bit beforehand, and he's a very fun guy to be around. I mean, he's lots of dirty jokes and lots of joking around all the time. And so he's a wonderful presence to be around anyway. But, you know, he is interesting in this movie. His son is in the movie, too, plays my son. And so I got to see that he actually is a good father. He seemed like a very sweet father with his son. And so that was nice to see and be around and to sort of feel. And it was a sort of way in for me to look upon him as a father and see him as a father. But mostly, I took his lead. You know, I mean, he's a way better actor than I'm ever going to be. So I just sort of followed him. And there was something of a paternal air to it, and somewhat, of letting this guy sort of, watching this guy and learning from him. And he's an extraordinary, when he's working on a scene, he can... He goes slightly mad with it, sort of. He'll pull it apart and do all kinds of crazy things with it and play with it like crazy. And you just follow him, and you have a wonderful time with him. And he draws things out of you, and he wants you to draw things out of him. He wants to play with you. So it's incredibly fun. So I think some of the relationship between those two characters is fun. There's a kind of enjoyment they have of each other, not just love and father and son, but there's a kind of fun complicity that they have together. They're kind of little, dirty little boys together, you know, and so something of that came out, I think.
Actually, I'll add something to that. Watching Paul and Dustin working together was like watching being present at an actor's workshop, some kind of a laboratory experiment, because you never knew what would come out next, because Dustin would deconstruct a scene, and it would for a while it would have no resemblance to what was actually written, and then somehow, but witnessing this was one of the more memorable experiences of my career, because it seemed brilliant. I had no idea how it would cut together, but it did. But I knew I was watching something being genuinely created from scratch, even as if we had no screenplay, although in the end, it is the screenplay that's on the film. But every time that Dustin and Paul had a scene together, they would deconstruct the whole thing. And Dustin would never say the same thing the same way twice. which kept him on his toes.
Yeah, it kept me alive. It was very nice.
Siguiente pregunta, por favor.
Two questions. Here I am. I'm here.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Just first of all, did you know Mordecai Richler at all? This goes to the four of you. As a writer, had you read any books of Mordecai Richler before this one? And second, why did you choose to change the location in the book, which is Paris, to Rome?
I was familiar with, I knew who he was, and I had, is that me? Probably me. I knew who he was. I had not read anything, and sort of the association I had in my mind was as a sort of American, as a kind of Canadian Philip Roth sort of writer, which is not really accurate, but I was not terribly familiar, but the other guy should answer that.
Well, I grew up reading Mordecai Richler, and I think so did you.
As did I.
And it was in Canada in high school. The Apprenticeship of Duddy Kravitz is compulsory reading. It was one of the few times in high school that I enjoyed doing homework, and that's how I got to know Richler at first. And then years later, I made a movie with him based on one of his earlier books, Joshua Then and Now.
That's good. That's you too.
Not me. That's awesome. That guy over there.
So this is, and when he wrote Barney's Version, which is the last novel of his that he wrote, he sent it to me, and we began to work on it together. And he wrote the first draft of the screenplay, and then he became ill, he passed away, and I was left with it on my own. But so he's played a very big role in my life, and I think in yours.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up reading his books in high school. All the way from grade 6 up until university was all compulsory reading, so to be able to work on an adaptation of one of his what I think is his best book was truly an honor for me.
Siguiente pregunta, por favor.
Next question, please.
Sí, sorry.
I can we are in Rome and instead of Paris, for there's two reasons. First is that that change was made when Mordecai was still alive. And it's based on the fact that there's two reasons. First, there's so many films that have been made with American expatriates in the Quartier Latin, you know, drinking in Saint-Germain des Prés. It didn't feel like we needed to do that again. But the other reason is that this book, for reasons that are not entirely clear, has become, the moment it was published, became a very major success in Italy, so much so that it's sort of part of the Italian culture. It was initially championed by a newspaper called Il Foglio, which now, some 10 years or 11 years later, still writes a political column by the editor-in-chief in the voice of Barney Panofsky. Lampooning Italian society and politics. And when Richler was alive and he took his first trip to Rome to read from the book, when he came back, he said to me, you know, at the time he was working on the screenplay, and he said, you know, here in Canada I'm just a novelist. In Italy I'm a rock star. So he was all for changing the location to Rome for that reason. That would have been enough reason. Go where we are rock stars. So that's why. Those are the two reasons.
See,
yes, over here. This is a question for both actors, for Paul and Rosamund. I would like to congratulate you both because I think that the film which is very difficult to achieve in cinema, which is the chemistry between the both leading actors. And I think it works quite well because... And it's essential to make believable something which is so incredible that a guy all of a sudden falls in love with another woman in the middle of his wedding ceremony, or what, after just getting married. And at the same time, I would like to know how you worked together. And I would also like to Paula, how did you work with Minnie Driver? Because when you work with Minnie Driver, you also achieve another chemistry, which is totally the contrary. That's the chemistry of two people that can't handle each other. And I would like to know, when you work upon this, do you work it in the same way? Do you use the same complicity, or are there different ways of addressing this as an actor when you try to portray that?
I mean, they're two very different relationships, and I think two different relationships develop with the two actresses, but they're also two very different human beings, these two actresses. And I think that they enter, I mean, Minnie was in a more kind of comic state anyway as she was working. I mean, she sort of was in this place of being, of playing that kind of thing, so I had a lot of, a different kind of fun with her. But it is it's right, it's a kind of anti-chemistry that still needs to be chemistry of some kind. Yeah, but that's the fun of that, is to be so put off by this woman. And it brings out the comedy of what she's doing anyway, and she's brilliant in it. But Roz and I mean, I was a huge admirer of hers for many years. And was, as everybody should be. And I was incredibly excited when they said that they were thinking for the part. And I couldn't wait to see her, and she came in to work on it a bit. And it was immediate chemistry, but I think a great actor like her, she was so open to me that she made the chemistry happen just because she's so, so great. But how we worked, I don't know. We had the unique experience of getting to actually rehearse in this movie, so I'll let her answer.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very strange thing. It's as strange a thing as, you know, human beings in real life, you know, what makes you connect with someone. I mean, the thing is, you've got a sort of shorthand when you play characters like this, because, you know, it's a wonderful story to tell. So in a way, you know, I felt like I could bring out all the best bits of myself playing Miriam and hide all the shit, you know, you know, because she's sort of got this, you know, and lovely qualities and the thing that happens with her and Barney is very romantic, you know. So in a way, you're getting to sort of live a fantasy in a way of all the sort of best sides of a romance,
right.
You know, which predisposes you, you know. So it's the sort of it's the combination of the chemistry with the actor, but layered on top this sort of funny alchemical combination that's them plus character. I don't know if you wrote it out as an equation what that would look like, but. You know, it's Dustin Hoffman was very, his big thing that he always talks about is intimacy. You know, he will not act with someone until he's got them like looking right in the eyes, you know. He kind of, you try to hug him just by sort of giving him a remote hug, and he's like, come on, get your hips in here. You know, that's not a hug, right? To kind of lean into someone, right?
Yeah.
And it's being able to look someone right in the eye, know that they're really looking at you. You know, and some actors won't do it. Some actors won't give you their eyes properly.
I put my hips onto it, though. I tried to.
Hola.
Hi. A question for Paul. I would like to know whether you really believe that there exist men who fall in love that way with a woman.
I do about 15 times a day. I fall in love with a woman like that. Easily 15 to 20 times a day I experience that and want to run off with somebody. What I liked about this guy is he actually does. I mean, I suppose all of us can objectively say it's somewhat reprehensible, and I guess it is, but I couldn't wait to actually play a guy who runs off like that, to finally be able to act on it, because I have to restrain myself all day long. Basically.
You kind of want men to do it. Like, I left the audition, actually, that Paul was talking about, where we met in New York, and I got on a flight back to London, and there was someone in the airport lounge, and he said, he said, they're calling the flight. He said, now get on out of here, or I'm going to run and leave my wife for you. And I thought, oh, that's the sign, you see, that's the sign. That means this job, I'm going to get this job, because, you know, that's the thing that would happen. That's Barney, and I am Miriam.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Siguiente pregunta, por favor.
Okay, next question. For Mr. Giamatti, it's the third film in the official section that we've seen that deals with the issue of Alzheimer. Quite curiously, I would like to know what you think of that disease or illness, or whether you prepared yourself of that final stage, or that the final part at the end of the film, when the character obviously suffers from Alzheimer's?
Well, it's a pretty horrifying disease. I mean, it's a pretty brutal thing. I mean, to get old, and lots of people, all they have is their memories, and then to get that wiped out is pretty horrific. I have had some experience of it. I had a grandmother who had that form of Alzheimer's like that, so I had some acquaintance with it, so I was able to sort of enact it the way I needed to. I liked the way it was done in the movie. I didn't ever feel like it was a movie about Alzheimer's. The character becomes a man who has Alzheimer's, and it just happens to be what happens to him. And the way it's sort of woven into the movie as he's old along the way is very subtly done in a lot of ways. And I really liked that about it. And I didn't want to get too heavy with it. It's heavy enough anyway, but I just wanted to keep it fairly restrained. It's a weirdly restrained disease to have. I mean, you become increasingly restrained as a human being when you go through it. But so to answer your question, I mean, I had some experience with it to study it and to act it out that way.
Next question, please. Yes, can you talk about the director and, well, the actor, about characterization, because it's very subtle, and in this case, it fits in very, very well. The characterization over time, I think he's talking about the fact of when you were younger and then when you're older and how that's characterized. I think it's what you talked about before, basically with the makeup and et cetera, and how did that process go by? It wasn't too clear. Sorry, I had to explain.
Well, a lot of it was figuring out how to age. I mean, that's a very tricky thing to do, the aging process and how you do it. And you need a very skillful makeup artist. And fortunately, we had an incredibly skillful makeup guy who did that stuff. It's tricky. It's got to look real. And it can really help you as an actor, too. I mean...
Yeah, because it means you look in the mirror on those rare occasions that you do. And you believe in yourself, you know, and part of the battle is, you know, before you can make an audience believe in you, you've got to believe in yourself. You've got to believe that you are that person before you can hope or have a hope in hell that anyone else will believe you're that person. So I think that to look in the mirror and just sort of see this other person who is visibly older is very helpful.
Mm-hmm. But the makeup never took the foreground, and that was very important for us, that it had to play a subservient role and not become about, look how wonderful the makeup is, look how much older they look. In fact, there was at first in early rehearsals and makeup tests, they looked much older, and I thought that was, you know, the director and I thought that this was way over the top, and we pulled back.
But it's really nice, because lots of the times in Venice, we were being asked about this, and people were only addressing the questions about prosthetic makeup to Paul. You know, it was as though lots of people hadn't realized that by the end I'm wearing a full face of prosthetics. Some people were visibly astonished, you know, which is great, which is exactly what we want. You know, we just want this sort of imperceptible kind of buying or acceptance of the fact that this woman is aging and this man is they're both aging without, you know, hitting people over the head with it and making them admire the makeup, because that's when you've done a bad job, I think.
Yeah, I also would like to add that Richard Lewis is not here with us because he would have loved to come. But his wife just had a baby, and so he would have been in a lot of trouble if he had come.
Siguiente pregunta. Next question, please.
Bueno, Leo.
I read here in the Venice official section, your film participated in Venice, that is to say, in the official section, and I'm very, very surprised. And I know, I can't hear him very well. I think he's quite surprised He's surprised that you didn't win any award. I think that's what he's trying to say to both of you, because you've done a great job.
Y yo creo que...
I think so far in the festival, seeing five films a day, this is the best film I've seen. Thank you very much in the Pearls section. And obviously it's, excuse me, I think it's a work of art, the truth is. It's a masterpiece, and I hope, time will tell nevertheless, but I hope you guys, hopefully you get lucky. I would like to say a few things to the scriptwriter and the director out here, but they carried out fantastic work. But you talked, someone said, mentioned before something about the rainbow, and there are three, there's a comedy, it's a romantic film as well at the same time, and it's a drama at the same time. There is a beautiful love story between both of you. The card that appears in the in his agenda, I'm not too sure. Excuse me. Could just tell him to stop. Que pare que no está muy sí.
Que te pegues por favor más al micro porque si no no te escucha, ¿o no?
That was really alarming when
no sé,
going...
estoy intentando interpretar signos, si me ayudáis, por favor, porque no entiendo nada.
No.
Ah, que se te quede lo sé.
I'm very sorry because it was distorting. I couldn't understand him. Yes, I'm going to make him say everything he said, all of it again. I think with the question would suffice. What do you want to ask them? That's the story at the end of the day, isn't it? You did hear something up until then. Please tell him you did. Yes, of course. Estabas hablando algo de un coche.
La
pregunta.
And the question is, this is the most surreal thing that's ever happened to in a press conference. You're telling me.
Affected by it because I've heard that the Spanish translations were not sort of perfect, so that apparently you might have missed some of the humour and some of the sort of finer points. So I think Robert would like to probably apologise on behalf of us for that or something.
Yeah, some of the I only saw this morning's the last few minutes of the film. And the first time I saw it was Spanish subtitles, and I can only say I'm sorry about some of them. I hope that they get better because there were some very if you're reading the subtitles, it's very hard to understand some of the things that are going on in the film. For example, at the near the end, when the firefighting water bomber shows up. And you know that's when we understand what happened to Boogie. But the sub when Barney's son says when you know, we used to love the water bombers when we were kids, the translation doesn't say water bombers; it says Canada Air. Yeah. very so. I saw quite a few things like that. So I'm sorry. It's. I hope it gets better when it's dubbed, but that's an essential moment. Or just before that moment, there was another moment when the two children are reading the will, Barney's will, and he says his son says to his sister, in reading the will, Barney says the will says that he wants Miriam to be buried in Mount Royal Cemetery in a plot right next to him. And his son says, that's not fair, she's married to Blair. And then the sister says, in English, she says, only till death do us part. But the subtitles, they don't say solamente hasta la muerte. They say exactly the opposite. Hasta la muerte nos separa. So she's confirming what he's saying. But in fact, she's saying the opposite. She's saying only till death do us part, which is what sets up the whole last scene in the film when Rosamund goes to the cemetery. I didn't see the rest of the film, so I don't know, but if that's an indication of how the subtitles are, me disculpe.
Quería acabar.
I would like to finish. I hope the microphone is sufficiently far enough. Yes, I would like to say I would have fallen in love with her, seeing her in at the wedding with that blue dress, and I would have run to the station, but I wouldn't have fallen down, Mr. Paul Yamati. I would have gotten on the train.
I'm only human.
Thank you.
What I can do. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
He said he would have fallen in love with you. Very complimentary. But he said that I wouldn't have been able to get on back on the train.